May I present Rekha? Rekha is a dancer choreographer who also conceptualizes the work that she does through the medium of dance and choreography. And that combination is not very usual, as we know. Rekha, with her partner Michael Weston, who is not here today, lived and had a school and a trust and a repertory company in Orissa. She has recently moved to Orville, Pondicherry, and she's getting engaged in the experience now. And we're very happy that this is really her first presentation to us.
Thank you, Asta, and thank you to all of you for coming. The association of Indian classical dance with spirituality is fairly common knowledge with most people. But what makes this of interest and relevance to Auroville and to this aspiration for embodying a higher form of consciousness and transforming society and creating a new world is that because of this centuries of association, there is in the dance traditions of India, and today I will focus really on the classical dance traditions of India where because this is the most evident in these forms, there is a body of knowledge and understanding about how to work through matter and access spirit. It is really a question of self-identification and of changing the self-identification from the realm of matter to the realm of spirit. Could I have the next slide? In this process, in this journey, models for the body, conceptual models for the body, are extremely useful. Sri Aurobindo has this model of the physical body, the vital body, the mental body, and the core being. The more traditional forms of yoga and tantric ritual use this system of the chakras, the body permeated by the chakras. Yesterday, while listening to Manoj and his title of A Square Foot of Light, in actual fact, this transition from matter to spirit through the body is a transition of 1 meter distance through the spinal cord. Could I have the next slide, please? But these models, I must say right at the outset that what really interests me about classical dance is the fact that through experience, through practice, you do find yourself making that transition. But in traditional forms of teaching in the country, to the best of my knowledge, across the board, a discussion about dance as a form of yoga or as a technical translation of ideas from yoga is really non-existent. So a lot of this process was very much an exploratory process, and I'm very much at the beginning of this process, and it's very wonderful being here in Auroville and actually coming to live here, where the focus of one's life and one's engagement with dance can take a more concrete direction in this. So I would welcome at the end of it any observations and comments anyone has to make. Next. So just to clarify that I'm talking about Indian classical dance forms, and I'm talking about this yogic chakra system. And it is really in this yogic chakra system, in the features of it, that you find the most incredible or remarkable similarities in the way Indian dance has approached its technique. And for a long time, I kept feeling that it's like a subconscious bedrock in the technique because it's an unarticulated comparison. I would like to just talk a little more about how and why this comparison actually operates. Both dance and yoga require two things. One is detachment, and the other is a re-identification. Detachment from your physical self and a re-identification with your spiritual self. This is like a fundamental requirement for yoga, and it's a fundamental requirement for attaining excellence in a dance form, in an Indian dance form. Next. When you start looking at the technique in greater detail, this subconscious understanding of the spinal cord being the key to it, and this transiting through the spinal cord being of such vital importance becomes more and more apparent. You have, just stay back. You have, for example, this central spinal cord. If you look at Indian dance forms, you always basically stay erect. You always open your knees and lower your body towards the ground. You work with your peripheral fingers and hands and face from the spinal cord. Whatever you do symmetrically. The spinal cord, the first thing you are made aware of is your center. And standing straight and, you know, pulling in the abdomen, releasing the lower back, balancing your weight on both feet, as my students will vouch for, is the first thing that is required before you begin, because that physical correction of the body or that physical realignment of the body is what makes you that empty conduit where your central axis becomes this link between the earth and the sky. The other interesting feature about Indian dance is that unlike forms that use the muscles or that that make you develop your muscles, with Indian dance it's very much more a relaxing of your muscles and a softening of your muscles and this complete flexibility or this physical releasing, which is what makes the dance work or the dance happen. And with it, you have this very unique feature of using your feet like a musical instrument. And you're actually dancing through the patterns of your feet in a kind of acoustic space. The sound and movement nexus is almost integral. You get into a state of harmony or of meditation because you are moving in such close harmony with sound. That element of connectedness and rhythm is of primary importance. And because of this whole tendency of lowering yourself to the ground and using the feet, what you are doing really is impacting the base of the spine with energy. And it is this energy that you are creating through the rhythm and through the movement of your feet that is then being channeled through the upper parts of your body and is being extended out into space through your limbs and through your face and through whatever else you're doing. So you are physically becoming this empty flute which is generating energy and within the lower spine. Yes.
Please stand and explain. You're doing such beautiful.
You know, lotus. Premaji, I'm sorry, but I've just sprained my knee.
One or two things.
Okay.
Actually, I think she's got a sprained ankle.
Well, I'm sorry.
So sprained ankle. It's a very stupid thing to have done, but I've done it. But.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Okay. The other thing about Indian dance, which is also so interesting, is the symmetry. Now, what happens with doing a movement on the left and doing a movement on the right, moving in space in front and at the back, which is almost like the structure of any dance sequences that you do, is that you generate the sense of complete balance in, you know, maybe the way you breathe or in the structures you create. And certainly it's like drawing a spatial yantra, the clarity with which you do it. And the more clear your movement articulations are and the more symmetric your movement articulations are, the more your dancing starts creating this energetic prism. Next, please. Next music. And as the state of joy or the state of euphoria that you arrive at through dancing excellently is has its parallel in yoga, which talks about this explosion in the mind and this state of euphoria because of the coming together of the nadis. It's a parallel experience that you have through the process of dance. This Kundalini experience has not happened to me, and as I said, this is a conjecture and drawing of parallels, but it seems to be the same thing that's being talked about. And the themes that are used to do this is mythological and religious. With dance, you are actually, impersonating gods and goddesses, or you're impersonating stories and really becoming them for that moment. It starts becoming a lived experience in order for it to be a real experience for your, on stage, for your viewers. And the chakra symbols are also, they also use a similar kind of mythology, where you're taking symbols from your environment and kind of collecting them and living them and living their consciousness, and that's what's slowly allowing you to get away from what you are and your limited perceptions of things and become something else slowly, progressively. Next. When dance is generally practiced, it is generally practiced as something beautiful that you do as an offering to the gods. It's not practiced as a form of serious yoga. It's practiced as a dance form, as an art form, as something beautiful, as an upasana. And this rasa theory, it's been sort of discussed threadbare by aestheticians in this country for many centuries. But essentially, it is a yogic experience of detachment. And in dance practice, the focus on the aesthetic experience has been so much because it has provided the sort of fulcrum around which you rise above yourself, or you stop being an impediment in the process of dancing. And you allow this separation of mind and body to happen, where your body becomes what you offer and you become one with the spirit. That is the principle on which dance practice is done, and that is what you strive to do in traditional dance training. But there is another aspect to dance practice and technique, which is also really fascinating, and that is, if you compare the way a Hatha Yoga asana is performed, you first learn to do a physical movement, then you combine it with breath, then you may combine it with a mantra or a sound, then you would combine it with being told to focus your mind at a chakra point, at a particular point on the spinal cord. You may be given a symbol to meditate on while you're doing that. But it is layers of learning. There is the physical, there's the breath, there's the imagination, and then there's the focused concentration on a point in the spinal cord. The process of doing Hatha Yoga, which any Hatha Yoga practitioner will tell you, becomes more and more complete and all-encompassing and more effective when you do the various layers. If you just do a physical movement and don't breathe with it, you have one effect from it. But if you breathe with it, you have a deeper effect. If you breathe and chant with it, you have an even deeper effect, and so on and so forth. Essentially, what the asanas are doing, theoretically, is clearing your chakras or clearing the subtler areas of your being and making the flow of energy through the Sushumna a greater reality and, more possible. This process can actually be reversed when you're training in dance. For example, now I will demonstrate. If you're doing a movement, you can do the movement with your muscles and your bones. Or you can do the movement fine-tuning on your spinal cord. The more you fine-tune on your spinal cord, the more subtle the movement becomes. And you start working on the movement from inside out as well as from outside in. And when you're actually in training and you work this way, can I have the next slide? When you're actually in training and you work this way with movement, with arriving at excellence in movement as your objective, you find all these things happening. You find heightened body awareness. You find that the more you are in tune with your spinal cord and the more concentrated you are at points on your spinal cord, the finer is the quality of your movement delivery. With emotional movements, if you do something with your arms and your back, or if you do something actually using your heart to project, the intensity of the movement and the efficacy of the movement becomes so much stronger. When you're doing a dance sequence, for example, if you can embody a yantra or this geometric diagram that's used in Tantra to draw clean, clear lines in space and balance geometric forms, the energy prism that you create becomes quite electric. And it is this, the more you do this, the more you work like this, the more you automatically step out of being the limited person you are with your thoughts in different directions and your desires and your aspirations and whatever, and the more you become the witness. And that is how the process of training allows you to actually aspire in a structured way. Next slide. So, as conclusion, matter precipitates divine consciousness through the dancing body.
Rekha, we are so happy you've come to live here.
I'm so happy to have come.
It was
to live
a wonderful presentation. And I think a lot of things we saw, connections that we made which we normally don't. I especially like the one where you made from the self to the self with a capital S. But expressing our joy at having you here and what you presented just now. And we hope your the sprain in the knee. A dancer has no business to have a sprain in the knee, frankly. But is this something that somebody would like to respond to?
I have only a few comments.
Yes.
This is one of the great things, dance and music both, where the subject and object become one. And it begins from the god Nataraja, I think in Bharatanatya Shastra. The dance is given by the Nataraja, the divine himself dances. And if you look at Rama, he is supposed to have only 12 kalas. And if you look at Krishna, who's a more evolved being, he has dance and music to his credit, and he has 14 kalas. And many people, and I met many exponents of Dhrupad. I went once to Fahimuddin Khan Dagar, and he was my neighbor. And then I asked him that, do you get spiritual experiences? So he told me yes. And he recited a shloka from Sam Ved, and he says it has come from the Sam Ved, Dhrupad. And sometimes he experiences, lotuses in the sky. And his elder, his uncle who recently died, he was given Sangeet Natak Academy Award in the ICU. He too explained that he used to get, some kind of intense light at the peak of his, singing, when he forgets and it becomes automatic. So those kind of experiences.
Very true. In fact, the life of an artist is always very difficult. But once you tastes this space, you're hooked, booked, and cooked, and there's nothing else you can do because nothing else makes life so alive. So it's, yes, and I think that's the magic in the arts.
The profession and hobby is the same there.
Yes.
Just a point of information, because your table of chakras didn't seem quite to correspond with what I'm familiar with, and I'm probably wrong. I see them as five, and then the supramental lotus chakra above the head. Mm-hmm. Sexual reproduction, the lowest. It seems you had two at the bottom there. One.
No, there's Muladhara at the bottom.
Sorry?
There's Muladhara chakra at the bottom, at the base of the spine.
Ah.
The sexual reproduction is the Svadhisthana, the second.
Ah, okay, so that's the first mistake. So I saw the sexual at the bottom. Then comes the stomach digestive, okay.
Yes.
Then the heart, that you had the heart, feeling and so on.
Yes.
Then the throat, I didn't see the throat
Vishuddhi,
for speaking.
Yes.
Was that there on the table?
Yes.
Yeah. And then I didn't see the mind, I thought it was here.
It is here.
Agya,
yes, and Sahasrara above.
And then I saw that the supramental is above the mind, isn't it?
Yes.
So basically, except for the bottom, I seem to be more or less on the right lines. Okay.
There are more, but these are the major ones.
There's six, really.
Yeah, these are the major ones.
I liked what you said about the dancer stepping out of herself, I believe it was, stepping out of her body.
Yes.
Because... I've been studying flute with a long time with T. Vishwanathan, whose sister was the famous dancer Bala Sarasvati.
Oh.
And there's recently been a book published about her, and one of the things about her was that she could do that. Mm. That when she danced, she became someone she became what she danced. And her ability to do that was what allowed her to communicate with people around the world, even though they may not have understood
what
she was doing. They understood that she had entered into something different, right? Mm-hmm. And I once saw her dance in the USA. She just got up and danced. She was at that time only doing Abhinaya. And even at the age of about 80, she could do it. She would, as soon as she got into the dance, she would become someone else.
Well, you're very fortunate to have seen her. Unfortunately, I never did. She died before I had an opportunity to. But she is like a living legend with all, you know, dancers in India. I believe, because she was supposed to have had something really special about her.
So this is true of really all great art. They put you in touch with an eye consciousness. Mm. It's not only Palasaras, but you can see that in other great artists.
Even Siddhartha Devi at the age of 90, you know how he dances.
Mm. You compared dance with yoga chakra. Mm. Is that the same as yoga asana?
Yoga asanas are the physical practice of asanas. Yogic chakras are, it's like a blueprint that underlies the practice of asanas and also tantric rituals. It's
main thing for tantra yoga.
Please clarify some technical words, paribhashik shabda, torso, dance and lower spine into upper areas of torso. Without head, torso means?
No, torso is this area and this is the lower spine. Actually, in the dance form that I do, Odissee, you have two completely different dynamics working. This area, you have a very grounded and a very strong structured way of working. In this area, you have a very relaxed and released way of working. So the energy, and this is what's true of Odissi. In other forms, you have different ways of using the upper body. But essentially, the energy that you generate through the stamping in the lower parts of the body is what you're expressing through your upper limbs.
Yes.
And the movements of the upper limbs are centered on your spinal cord in the upper torso.
Thank you.
In Gujarat, there is a lot of practice of garba, ma ka garba,
yes.
Or dandiya ras.
Yes.
Navratri, 9 days, you know, it's going on all maybe early morning. So that kind of thing, it's devoted to the Krishna. You know. So that has the same effect you are discussing here?
Fundamentally, whether it is folk dance forms or it's tribal dance forms that move even less, this process of getting into a meditative, getting into a transformed space through repetitive movement, which generates through the lower body an energy that is then transmitted to the upper parts of the body, is something fundamental. In folk dances, it's less sophisticated. In the classical forms, it is very sophisticated, because in the classical forms, the use of your hand gestures are like, you know, extension points. I mean, if you're doing this movement or if you're doing this, there's a completely different way the body feels it. And in the classical forms, because you have this wide spectrum of hand gestures, you can be very subtle with the way you express this energy. In dandiya, if you're just hitting or you're just doing this, the expression of this energy is a little more simple.
One more. How about in foreign countries, Arabic exercise.
Yes.
All body parts involved in it, and it's very, very fast.
Yes.
And like a bhangra.
Yes.
Punjabi bhangra, lot of hand movement.
Yes.
What is that is the same thing or no?
Aerobic exercises would come in a different category of exercises. Bhangra again comes in this joie de vivre and very, you know, very kind of connected to the ground and very, it's reaching out. It's a folk, it's an exuberant folk form of Indian dance that operates within the same spectrum of reaching out of your body through dance. Aerobic exercises are really, you know, it's training the body, training your muscles. It's not operating within the same parameters. But yes, fundamentally, the human body, whether it is for Indian dance or it's for contemporary dance or it's for martial arts or for... I mean, you see this very clearly in belly dance or in Southeast Asian forms, where there is a similar philosophical framework. There is a predominance in a certain way of using the body. In contemporary dance, where there isn't, you would bend your spine or you would, you know, you would do... You would keep moving yourself in different ways. Yeah.
Rekha, one can see that this is the first of your many presentations in Auroville. We have seen you dance on the stage, but these are the questions that you have evoked show that there's a lot that you want to hear from me about it. So we can perhaps move out for a cup of tea where some other questions can come to you.
Thank you,
Rekha, and get well soon.
Thank you.